In Van City Radio, 101.9 FM on CITR, or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners. However you've decided to spend this hour with us, we're really glad to have you. So in Vancouver, there is a lot going on in general, especially with sexuality all the time, even though we think of ourselves as a no-fun city. There's the good and the bad. And one of the things I did see today when I went on to Facebook was The Naked Truth, which is a forum for sex workers. Annie Temple, who also does Dancers for Cancer, had started it, and she's passed the reins on to Ms. Scream. So I was really excited about that. So that was piece one of some of the neat news that has been going on. Second piece is the fact that they are going to be taking applications for the Adult Film Awards, the TNA, in Vancouver, which is coming up this Saturday. And last but not least, which I thought was really cool, especially in light of the Missing Women's Inquiry we're bringing the International Day to End Violence Against Sex Workers to Vancouver. And that's to The Naked Truth, which I thought was really, really, really cool. And for those of you who are not familiar with what International Day to End Violence Against Sex Workers is, it was the brainchild of Dr. Annie Sprinkle, and I'm taking this straight off of Wikipedia, just so you know, and the Sex Workers Outreach Project in the USA. And sex workers' rights organizations. And originally it was conceived as a memorial and a vigil for the victims of the Green River Killer in Seattle, and it's now evolved into an annual international event. And it's really great because it draws attention to HIV, AIDS, hate crimes against sex workers all around the globe, as well as the need to remove the stigma and discrimination, which is perpetuated by custom and all the different laws that has made violence against sex workers acceptable. And the red umbrella has become a symbol for sex workers' rights, and it's being used increasingly on December the 17th. So, Ms. Scream, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So, congratulations. I'm doing well and excited.
Me too.
So, congratulations for taking over Naked Truth. It's a fantastic site.
Thanks. I'm so happy. You know, I've been a member on there for a long time. And Annie was looking for someone to take it over, and I feel very honored that she trusts me to continue the legacy and keep on all the advocacy and support for, you know, online sex industry workers, and as well as all the fun events and naughty times that we get to have as well.
And tell me a little bit about that as well, because the awards are coming up, and you're mentioning that the applications are actually starting Saturday, which I thought was really cool, even though the awards, I believe, aren't till June?
Yeah, it's the nominations. And
thank you.
So basically there's a process where anybody can become a member and can nominate their favorite adult industry workers in Canada. It's Canada-based, so we try and, you know, focus on that. So we include all areas of the sex industry, like exotic dance, escorts, BDSM workers, phone sex workers, webcam workers, adult film workers. But we also include, you know, our favorite advocates, our favorite clients, you know, anything along those lines that, you know, favorite, even like companies that make sex toys, you know, that type of thing, anything that has to do with the industry. We try and bring everyone together as a community and have an award, because, you know, a lot of the time people in the adult entertainment industry, it's a really thankless job a lot of the time. And so we want to pat everyone on the back and say, you're doing a good job, and have this award ceremony every year. It's June 9th, 69. June is 6 months on the 9th day. So the nominations are open Saturday, and you can nominate as many people as you want. And you just have to go to nakedtruth.ca, and you'll see exactly where you need to do it. And then the nominations close December 31st, and then we start the voting process.
Cool. And I just want to clarify, is it TNA or T with the, I forget what that.
TNT award?
TNT, thank you.
Yeah, the Naked Truth. That's what TNT stands for.
Of course. I can't believe I didn't get that. Thank you. It's like dynamite. So
it's not just dynamite.
Perfect. And you're mentioning that there's going to be a lot of changes. Up on the website, it actually mentions that there's a lot more things going on. So besides the...
Well, the website's horrible right now, and we're doing a complete upgrade
so that
it will be more like a Facebook. So it's an older version, and the albums aren't working, and there's, you know, some imperfections that we need to overcome. And that will be taking place in the next month or two. It's just taking a long time to transfer all the information from one site to the new site, and then we will have a formal launch.
Nice. Any expectations as to when that launch is going to be?
Hopefully within the next 2 months, but everything has to be transferred over manually, so it's very tedious.
In terms of on the forum, has there been, because you mentioned at the top of this, just sometimes with sex work, people have different ideas of what it is. Is there sometimes, like, what are some of the more common arguments you have in regards for people, like in terms of what they perceive as sex work?
Yeah, well, definitely. The Naked Truth used to originally be a site that was for advocacy and support and education specifically for exotic dancers. And then Annie Temple decided to change it to include all members of the adult entertainment industry and bring us together as a community.
And why did you
say that? And there were some people that were really upset by that.
You're mentioning that. And what was the concept for the change?
Well, the concept for the change was to bring everybody together and try and develop a community that was all-inclusive and gender-inclusive, so that you would just reach more people.
Okay.
And we know we do there's a lot of advocates and a lot of support workers on there. And I think it's, you know, really important to be able to help people and have peers that can help people that are coming from a different perspective.
That makes sense. And any listeners out there, if you want, you can actually submit your comments on Facebook at facebook.com, Sexy and Van City Radio, or on at Sexy and Van City on Twitter if you'd like to contribute to this conversation. You're listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR, and we're talking to the lovely, the delectable Ms. Scream. So tell me
Thanks.
A little bit. You're welcome. So the other thing that you're bringing to Vancouver, so we've got the awards coming up for June, so we've got a lot of stuff. There's going to be the grand party with just a lot of the changes, the celebration. And then next on the list is also, and I think this is just so important, especially with the Missing Woman Inquiry, about safety for sex workers. And I don't know whether or not I should call it the Red Umbrella Campaign or just about basically on December 17th that people should, you know, even though we should be thinking about this 365 days a year, but very important for the 17th.
Yeah, on December 17th, we're going to hold a memorial event at the Prop House Cafe, which is located in Vancouver at Commercial Drive and Venables. And everyone should go out and buy red umbrellas and buy an excess of red umbrellas because we're going to donate them to the MAP van to hand out to all the sex trade workers that are working outside. We know that it rains a lot in this city, and if anybody has any clothes or shoes or umbrellas that they can donate to the event, that would be great. And we'll have a memorial service for all the women in the community that have suffered violence and, murder,
mm-hmm.
Working on the streets in our neighborhood, and have an event to pay our respects. And later on in the evening, we're going to celebrate all the wonderful things that have happened in the sex industry movement to try and make things better, such as, you know, having the laws overturned in Ontario. and such. Well, you know, we know it's going to go up for appeal, but that's something to be celebratory about, and all the other good things, and trying to have a love-in, and we'll have some DJs and dancing afterwards and try and, you know, leave on a positive note.
And in terms of the laws in Ontario, I just want to clarify for listeners here who may not be familiar with the changes in the law. Would you be able to speak to that? Just in regards to sex work, and just and if I remember correctly, it was decriminalization that happened.
Well, the decriminalization hasn't completely happened.
Okay.
I guess basically, and you can. Judge Susan Himmel, I believe her name is, said that it is unconstitutional, the current laws against sex trade workers.
Okay.
You know, like, why would it be illegal to have a body house? You know, if somebody has a safe place to work inside, why would Canadians support taking that away from people? You know, And there's all sorts of other injustices, you know, and then there's, you know, the communications law where you're not allowed to communicate in public, you know, to set up a client if you're working in the sex trade. Well, you know, that's ridiculous. Like, you need to set up the terms of what you're agreeing to beforehand. And if people are working on the street, that just has to be done in a public way. So no one's going to just jump into a car and then try and decide what you're going to do. Or people do that, but that's often when conflict can arise if, you know, expectations aren't being met. Or, you know, there's just lots of violent predators out there anyways that are just going to do horrible things.
I think the Picton case is a very viable in regards to that. In Vancouver in particular, there's a very strong divide in regards to whether to decriminalize or whether to, in terms of abolition. And I don't know if you could speak to that a little bit, just in regards to that.
I think everybody is against violence towards sex trade workers.
Mm-hmm.
Some people just are against sex trade work. And the truth is that there are some people that engage in sex trade work that are consenting adults, and they have every right to consent to do what they do in their bedrooms is their own business, and these other people shouldn't make judgments and say, you're a victim, or, you know, whatever other excuse they're trying to say, and you're being violated, you're being exploited, you know, and that's not true. You know, there's lots of people that work in, and not just even in the actual sex trade industry, but people that work as exotic dancers or adult film performers, or, you know, someone who might be a dominatrix or something. Are you going to tell me that a dominatrix is being violated while, you know, when she's getting paid hundreds of dollars to kick someone in the balls? You know, that's probably the most female supremacism in many ways, and I don't know how anybody could think that would be violating. And being a dominatrix or running a dungeon is considered prostitution according to Canada, and that's why the dominatrix in Ontario, Terry Jean Bedford, had to face these charges in the first place. And that's what helped to turn over the laws in Ontario. And so it's all ridiculous. I want to respect, as Canadians, that we all have our right to our beliefs. I'm not going to say, oh, I hate what abolitionists think just because I think differently. But I do, and I'm glad that we have the freedom of thought, but I don't think the way that an abolitionist thinks. I am happy being a dominatrix. I'm happy that I've been an adult performer. It's helped me to make all sorts of money and do all sorts of wonderful things with my life, and I don't feel victimized in any way by it.
But for the women who are victimized, so the survival sex workers, where it hasn't been a choice, what are your thoughts in regards to that?
We need to create more health and safety options for these people. You know, just to say, oh, I want to abolish sex trade. Meanwhile, someone's out there selling sex, maybe on the street, for example, to buy food. or to provide for their child, or, you know, or to even to support a drug habit if they are addicted to drugs. It's unrealistic to think that you can just abolish that unless you can, you know, unless you can abolish poverty or abolish need, you know, and altogether. And that's just not realistic. And I think that just like how Insight was able to win to have an exemption and have a safe place for people to inject drugs and be watched by nurses and have proper medical care and have, you know, exiting like at the detox center upstairs where if people want to detox and go into treatment, they can. I think that the same formula should be used for sex trade workers. There should be a safe sex worker site. There should be exiting programs for people that want or need to get out. And but also providing a zero barrier harm reduction program where people can come into a facility and be able to see somebody, have cameras and support staff and condoms available and whatever, you know, showers and that kind of thing available to them so that it's just like an entry level to, you know, making contact with these women to try and help to make them safer and, you know, hopefully to help create, you know, healthier and safer conditions for their life.
If they do, just say hypothetically, if it does get where they are, they do decriminalize or legalize prostitution in British Columbia. In terms of, I'm thinking downtown Eastside really specific with this, and I know that's only 20% of the sex work that is done in this province, if I remember correctly from the CBC documentary, A Safer Sex Trade. What do you think will happen with the women? Because I know one of the beliefs, and I do hear it when I've had abolitionist guests on the show before, that one of the concerns is that for the women who have HIV or hepatitis C, that it will actually drive them underground because they won't be able to actually work.
Well, there's already tons of people that are working in the survival sex industry trade that have HIV and hepatitis C right now.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily everybody is having safe sex, but that's not just that should not fall on the hands of just the person with HIV. Like, what are you doing as a client picking up somebody off the street and having unprotected sex with them? I think that's a two-way street. Like, I think that it's equal in terms of responsibility. I don't think that providing a safe space for these people is going to push them underground, especially now that they know if people are on antiretrovirals, it actually lowers their viral load and lowers the chance of them to be able to transmit the virus. And if they were in a supported space, then someone could actually be administering those medications to them on a daily basis as well.
That's an interesting point in regards to the antivirals. That's interesting. We're just getting some comments from our Twitter feed. One of our listeners is just saying abolition is a delusion. As long as people like getting laid and getting paid, the two will meet.
Well, it does come down to need and supply, just like with anything else. And I don't think that will. I can't foresee that changing. You know, if I don't imagine in my mind in any way, all of a sudden, nobody providing any either adult entertainment or sex trade specific services.
What about in someone, say, like Sweden, where they've actually taken an abolition stance, where they've increased the education for children in school in terms of empowerment with women? They've actually made it illegal in terms of sex work in Sweden.
From my understanding, in Sweden, they were trying to be punishing the jaunts.
Yes.
And I think that is not going to work either, because as long as you make any element of it illegal, then it's going to push things underground. So if someone's working in the sex industry and nobody's arresting them, but they're just getting all their johns and clients arrested, then that's going to cause problems. And then the sex trade workers are going to want to go work underground so that they can actually have a regular client base that isn't constantly going to jail.
And I believe they're also offering exiting strategies there as well. I was just curious in regards to that compared to, say, in Amsterdam, where they're having women sometimes being trafficked in as well, in certain parts of Germany as well, where there's actually been an increase in terms of human trafficking because they've been able to do it by legalizing.
Well, I think if anybody is being trafficked to do a job that they do not want to be doing, that is criminal. But if somebody, there's migrant sex workers, which are people that just travel from one place to the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I could even be considered that I travel and do tours myself. And, but I'm not working for anybody else. I'm independent. But, if someone's migrating around and it's what they want to be doing, then they should be allowed to. But if there is somebody smuggling and trafficking and people and making them do sex trade work to pay off debts, or mm-hmm. it's just, some sort of control, evil thing that's going on, then I believe that is a violation to that woman or man, whoever it's happening to, mm-hmm. and I disagree with it.
And in terms of for some of the changes, and I know I'm just asking a lot of opinion questions right now, what are thoughts in regards to if we do move towards decriminalization, things that we can put in so that people are not getting trafficked through the system?
Well, if it's not illegal, people aren't going to be hiding. And I think that will help in many ways to be able to determine people that are... if you have like a huge pile of sex trade workers, ooh, that sounds delicious, doesn't it? You have a huge pile of sex trade workers and you don't know who is trafficked and who isn't trafficked, it makes it so hard. But if it's decriminalized, it's a totally different thing. If they could buy a visa and come into town to do escorting, and that was an option for them, and they can have it all straight along the board and everything up front, then that would make things, a lot more apparent. I don't know. I don't have any ideas of what the perfect solution would be, but I do think that if it's decriminalized to do it, then it will it'll be easier to find out who is ending up having to do it against their will, compared to who's doing it of their will, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense?
No, that makes sense. That does make sense. I was just curious in regards to what your thoughts were in regards to that, just based on some of the things that have happened in different countries. Mm-hmm. I think on a personal level, I think with Canada, I think we need to explore the issue a lot more just to find a happy medium. Because both sides are very divided, but in regards to a lot of the strategies that the other countries have put in, like either enforcement with more exiting strategies, as you're mentioning, more in terms of for addiction, a lot of support that way. If we were able to put the monies in there, I think there would be a lot more hope of success for either solution.
We do have a excellent, top-notch exiting program called Pierce Vancouver. If anybody is in the sex industry and they want to exit, then Pierce Vancouver has outreach workers that go up and down the streets handing out condoms and materials, and they have all sorts of programming. They help people to get into regular, I don't know if you want to call it regular, but, like square, non-sex trade work. I think if anybody wants to be exiting, that they should have as many opportunities to exit as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And Pierce Vancouver is the best place to start in terms of being in Vancouver.
Now, Peers is great. There's some wonderful opportunities through PACE as well, and Wish Drop-In Center as well has some many things. And you mentioned the MAPFAM, the Mobile Access Project, which is under PACE and Wish's umbrella, which is great.
Yeah, from my understanding, PACE and Wish and MAP don't consider themselves to be exiting programs.
No, they accept the
they're more harm reduction programs and education support, counseling, advocacy, and then the Peers Vancouver focuses on the strictly. Oh, there's also Hustle. That's for men.
Mm-hmm.
You heard of Hustle before?
I have. I think it's a great organization as well.
Yeah, and Boys R Us. There's quite a few sex trade worker organizations where people can go to for help if they need to get access to a variety of different things, and everything's there because there's some people that don't want to leave the sex trade industry, and so you need to have services that cover all different areas of where people are at.
Because
you want to meet people where they're at, or else they won't be getting the services that they actually need.
Yeah, they'll fall through the cracks.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we don't want to happen.
No, we want to make sure we're able to take care of people. It's important.
Yeah, yeah. And they're all wonderful agencies. I've worked for many of them. And I highly admire the people that are there and the work and advocacy they do. And a lot of them were involved in, originally at least, at any rate, with the inquiry that's going on right now. And it seems like everybody's dropping out. If there's any lawyers out there that care about sex trade workers, please come and help support all of the advocate organizations. I mean, there is all these, you know, legal, you know, like BC Civil Liberties and LEAF and other legal organizations, but everyone's just backing out because it's so unfair.
That's very unfair. I believe there's been a lot of outcry around the world, actually, about it.
Well, I think the police are the only people that you can rely on to be able to investigate themselves. And, okay, so they're going to have a bunch of what they've done exposed to everybody, but it's not going to change, you know, what they've done. They can kind of give a half-ass apology. And I've had some police officers actually try to give me a sincere apology, thinking that I want the apology, you know, but I don't personally feel that I need an apology. I think that what we need to focus on is that we need to make sure that things like this never happen again, and we need to strategize towards creating a plan so that the police can never do this ever, ever again. That the RCMP, that the police, that no matter what horrendous things are going on, they need to be accountable. They need to know that they fucked up. And excuse my language, sorry. And just make sure that they never, ever, ever allow anything as horrible and blatantly obvious that they don't care about, you know, survival, outdoor, working sex trade workers, it's obvious that they didn't care. And you know, they have to just own that, apologize to everybody from the bottom of their heart, and move on and never let it happen.
I think in regards to the inquiry, too, it will be interesting to see the thoughts because there are different police officers as well who are very involved with the case. For example, Dave Dixon, which I know many of the women actually like a lot, who is, you know, who I...
He brings them cigarettes down on the stroll. He goes and visits everybody still, even after he's left the position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't think all of them can be painted with the same brush.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about the people that are directly responsible. Because as we go through, you know, you can see that there's certain officers that weren't paying, senior officers that weren't paying attention to what other officers were telling them. and all sorts of stuff was falling through the cracks. And, you know, all of us in our lives get paid to do a certain job, and they were getting paid and weren't doing what they needed to be doing. And because we can't change the past, they have to focus on creating a solution so that it could just never happen again. And I think that's what they absolutely need to keep at the forefront of their mind, is to make sure that this doesn't happen. There was the Gary Ridgway killings. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many people he killed. I think it wasn't it like 50 or 60?
I'm not sure of the exact number, but I do know it was a lot. And I can remember growing up in Vancouver at the time. It was during the same time the Clifford Olson case was going on. And mm-hmm. at one point, they weren't quite sure whether or not it was a cross-border murder or not that was actually doing both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was pretty scary.
Yeah, I thought he was coming here every once in a while, but I might be... I don't want to provide misinformation on the air.
No, neither of us but I know growing up, people did worry about that.
Yeah, yeah, and there's just been other serial killers. I don't think they've caught whoever was killing people in the Highway of Tears. That hasn't been solved. You know, if a whole bunch of police were getting decapitated, sexually assaulted and butchered, something different would have been done than what has been happening to these women. And it's obvious. You know, there's just no way to hide that's just the truth. And I guess that's what's disappointing, when it seems like the police investigate themselves, because I know that they do decide to investigate themselves, it just shows how ridiculous and how much they, you know, how corrupt the whole process is. No wonder all these people are pulling out. No wonder everybody is trying to leave this, you know, this inquiry, because, you know, it's totally unfair. And so from what I understand from reading the news, what I'm getting this from the Canadian Press is, excuse me just for one sec while I get the actual, they said that they wanted to provide a couple lawyers. I want to make sure my information is accurate here. From what I understand is more than 20 advocacy groups and other organizations have withdrawn. But I have a hard time believing that there's no lawyers at all that would want to try and help with this. And if the government isn't going to provide money for every single person to have proper legal representation, there has to be lawyers out there that will do this pro bono and get everybody who's been affected by this deserves like financial remuneration, an apology internationally. They deserve everything that any rich white cop's family would get. And in terms of, you know, anything to try and, the grief and the loss that's gone along with this is incredible, and it's huge. And there needs to be some sort of justice that takes place. So if anything, I hope that there'll be a whole bunch of lawyers that'll step forward. And even though it's not fair that certain people are getting money, these assholes need to face justice, or justice needs to happen for the victims, is what I mean to say. And if everyone just steps out, I don't believe that it's going to, I would like to think if everyone protests against it, that they'll just stop the inquiry, but I don't trust that that will happen. What if they don't try and change things and provide everybody a full paid lawyer and everyone backs out? What happens then? They just do their inquiry and it's unfair, and it's just left to what, you know? And so something needs to happen. And I hope something does happen.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of, it definitely affected many people in so many different ways in regards to, and it still is, just the whole city is just in an uproar. And
I know, I was reading about the protest. Holy smokes. I wonder if they're going to be happening tomorrow. There was protests downtown. They closed off parts of streets right downtown, and the protesters just were, you know, they just weren't having this. So hopefully it's going on tomorrow. Everybody should go downtown and support. They were in the middle on West Georgia Street, and it was forcing police to block traffic between Seymour and Howe Street. So everyone should go down there and show support, and you know, of the injustices that's being done throughout this inquiry.
No, definitely. Are you going to have anything in terms of more empowerment stuff on Naked Truth when it comes up?
Well, you know, I'm on the Naked Truth every day, and I've been an advocate and support worker for sex trade workers since 2005 when I initially got hired on the MAP ban. And if anyone needs support, they can just message Ms. Scream on the Naked Truth. But there are so many advocates and support workers on there that even as an anonymous person, you can make a fake email account and log in as a fake person. All we need to know is that you're of age. You have to be 19 or older on the site. We don't have anything for you right now, just because a lot of the content on the site is adult-oriented. But anyone can come on and blog about anything or use the forums. We did all create a health and safety guide called Trade Secrets.
Tell me a little bit about that, about the health and safety guide.
Well,
like if someone's thinking of getting into the industry.
Well, it was funded for a while, and then the funding was taken. It was gone. And so a whole bunch of sex workers and adult entertainers from all different industries came together to make this wonderful guide to teach everybody about health and safety from entering the business or to being in the business or to wanting to exit the business or everything in between, how to work with the most utmost health and safety standards in any industry in the adult world, and it's to help people. And there's places where you can enter comments on every page, and that's another good place to get online support. I definitely think that there's a lack of support for indoor adult entertainers. So, but the Naked Truth, nakedtruth.ca, and the Trade Secrets Guide online, definitely are two really excellent resources in terms of that.
In terms of for working inside, what are some things in terms of, you'd mention it especially for women who are working in sex trade outdoors, or men, for example, trying to negotiate before getting into a vehicle with someone. In terms of bringing someone into, whether or not it's your home that you're working out of or whether or not you're renting a space, what are some things in regards to safety, just for personal safety, that you recommend in terms of...
If someone was outside, bringing someone inside?
Like, say someone is an escort where they're meeting a potential client for the first time.
Well, if I was an escort, I wouldn't meet anybody in their car for the first time.
Sorry, I meant
that would be
comparison.
The first health and safety tip. Either have them come to your workspace and have security on site, maybe in a suite next door or in another room, or going to a hotel where there's cameras everywhere and having a spotter who's outside in the car who drives you there and does check up phone calls, and if you don't respond, comes up and deals with it. Always having your cell phone handy and ready to push, you know, 911 if you need to, your security guard's number right away. Always having condoms and health and safety supplies, harm reduction supplies are important. Making sure all of your curtains are closed so you don't, so neighbors don't see what's going on is good. You know, there's a variety of things you can do, but, you know, I wouldn't hop in a car. People can have anything in a car. They can have any weapon of choice in a car.
Okay.
You know, that car ride could be your last car ride. And that's what makes so different. It's so difficult for people with their working on the streets. Not all clients that want to pick up sex trade workers in a car are violent. But for the ones that are, that's the perfect opportunity for them to be able to attack a person.
Mm-hmm.
And when I worked on the mat ban, I got tons of people who told me stories of awful things that happened to them from when they were hopped into cars with people, being threatened with screwdrivers, having their, you know, when their bottom parts of their clothes are taken off, the guy will just grab their money and kick them out the door, and then they have no, you know, they have no underwear or pants or anything, and they're just left outside with no money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, stuff happens like that. And, you know, that's why it's so important to have indoor spaces, because you can increase the security so much.
Yeah, no, it's true. What is, in terms of comparing in terms of sex work and actually dating, because sometimes it can be really scary, just regular dating. You're meeting people, you don't really know a lot about them before you go out with them. And some of the stuff you're mentioning actually does pertain quite nicely. And I'm thinking, for example, online dating, especially when people chat a lot via texting, etc., where they actually haven't really made that connection directly.
Yeah, well, holy smokes. Meeting people online, that's just the way it is nowadays with dating. There's like OkCupid and Plenty of Fish and every other, those are probably the old school ones. I don't use them, so I don't really know what the up-to-date, up-and-coming site is or anything. People just meet people online all the time, and they just don't have any wherewithal to be able to even consider that, wow, some guy's on a dating site. I've been communicating with him for a month. I'm going to go meet him on a date. Wow, what a good resource for a total creep, you know? You have to be careful
cautious
at all times. I think for a first date, if you're meeting somebody, I almost suggest having a group date and have it and meet in a public space where there's other people around. And you'll say, oh, well, I'll bring a friend if you bring a friend, and just, you know, if you have a friend that's good enough, they'll go with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably a safe way to go about it. But also, it's always good to keep track of all the phone numbers, like have call display and emails that come in, and keep logging all information that you can.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing that, make little files on different people. You know, you could be thinking that you're speaking to three or four different people on a dating website, and have it actually be the same person who's just a psycho, who's just trying to see, well, what happens if I do say this? What will they say? And what if I ask for that? What will they say? And just gather all sorts of information on you and how your reactions are. Psychopaths are also, there's very smart and psychologically minded psychopaths out there that you want to be careful of, because they exist. You know, so health and safety is important with online dating, just like it is for people that are online sex working. I just think online sex, you know, indoor I know that outdoor and indoor workers work online, so I'll be inclusive in the statement, but people that use the tool that are doing it professionally, I would say often have better health and safety strategies than people that don't know what they're doing. So that might be a new tool that someone needs to create is, you know, safety for people that are online dating, or probably already exists and I don't even know about it.
No, it's just interesting because even when you're talking about having the spotter, in terms of security, having your phone all geared up, it just kind of made sense in regards to just some of the advice we've given over the years for online. So, for example, making sure that someone knows where you're going. I liked the idea about the files. I hadn't even thought about the fact it could be psycho, where they could have multiple profiles set up, and had never even thought about that, but that was a really interesting point with that, because it's true, you don't know, even though we love to give people the benefit of the doubt, and as you said, it is a way that people meet regularly these days, where it's not uncommon, because for 9-to-5 jobs and many jobs, they're not 9-to-5 anymore, where people tend to work longer hours. With sexual harassment laws, people are afraid to meet people at work sometimes. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, for sure.
Whereas back in, you know, if you look back at like the 40s or the 50s, where did people meet? They either met through family, friends, religious organizations like their church or whatever, and at work. That's where they met, or school. And now, people still do meet at school, which is great, but online seems to be a lot more commonplace.
Yeah, well, and it's also,
and
you know,
good and bad with
you
both.
Can go out and meet people at sports clubs, and you can go out and meet people at restaurants, and or do whatever, however you're meeting people, reading clubs, whatever your gig is, but someone could still have a fake front on. So, I mean, it's just that with the internet, you can pretend to be someone else, but you're not looking directly your eyes into their eyes.
Hmm.
It's a lot easier to be a fraud when you don't have that person-to-person contact where your intuition can help you on that level.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, I think of it as slightly more dangerous. But we do live in a world and with all sorts of people, and we just, you know, everyone's got to have their own ways to keep themselves safe. And, you know, if you want to be dating someone, you have to take a risk at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just, you know, not everybody marries their high school sweetheart.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't always happen that way.
That's true. As much
but some
as
people meet
kids.
Online and they fall in love and they get married.
It's very true.
Happily ever after.
And love can happen at any point. I think that's one of the things that's really important to remember. Even if sometimes I hear this a lot, it's just Vancouver can be a really difficult city to date in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the things we have to remember, that there love does exist. And there is hope if that's what we choose that we want in our lives, which I think all of us, regardless what form of love, it's really important. I think it's really good for making us feel good.
I agree. Mm-hmm. There is love in this world.
And let's hope that people find that. So however you need to, and it starts with taking care of you.
Mm-hmm.
Right from the get-go.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. So if you could basically wave a magic wand and basically change the world, so 20 years from now looking back, what would you like to see?
Oh, I'd all want us to have a big love-in and just all get naked and roll around.
Fair enough.
I don't know. Well, I'm not sure. What would I want? Well, you know, everybody has the you know, love and world peace and all that good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I wish the world didn't have all these horrendous things that we had to worry about, and people that, you know, all this violence and war and horrendous things, but unfortunately we can't, you know, we're brought into this world. The world isn't brought unto us, and we're in a corrupt world.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all we can do is just hope for all the good things in our lives and you know, wish, I hope that people could wish good things for other people and have tolerance and acceptance and stuff of everybody, and And I think that would make the world a better place.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I think as long as people feel really good about who they are and can find a lot of like-minded people, so in terms of really building really solid communities, I think it makes a huge difference. In terms of sexuality, on a personal note, I hope that we're able to change our education system. So based on different things, so in terms of choice and trying to reduce the amount of guilt around sexuality, but making sure it's age appropriate in terms of as we upgrade our system.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to change our system so it's not guilt-ridden is what I'd like, where
yeah,
there's more education.
I wish people didn't see sexuality as such a big threat or crime or immorality and stuff, you know. Different strokes for different folks. I wish there was no homophobia. I wish there wasn't sex workophobia. Mm-hmm. I wish people could love exotic dancers and be kind to adult entertainers and think lovely things. And, you know, I wish that people could love sex trade workers. I wish people, when they see women that are, or men or trans or whoever on the street that are having a hard time in their life, that people could see them through the eyes of love instead of judgment or thinking that they know what's better for them and try and tell them, oh, you shouldn't be doing this or you shouldn't be doing that, and just accepting humanity and trying to help to encourage health and safety and love for people and coming just from a different place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the Puritan way of thinking has really skewed a lot of perspectives. And I mean, not that I'm not for being pure, but it's kind of gross that people think that way, that people will look at a sex worker and be like, oh, that person's impure, you know, and think that they might be sinning or something like that. It's just horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be more love in the world than that.
It would be nice to see more love, definitely. I think it's really, really, really key, and just feeling good about what your choices are in regards to sexuality, I think is very important. Giving yourself freedom to explore age appropriate with that,
yeah,
as well, and also realizing that it's never too late. So if there's something you've wanted to try, as long as you're not hurting someone else, and in particular yourself, unless it's in terms of submissive, which is different, but when you're actually being cruel, like a Picton or something like that, where it's a psycho, seriously screwed up thing. And yes, I'm being very judgmental with that. But I think as long as you're not hurting yourself, you're not hurting other people, I think you should give yourself an opportunity to explore. So whether or not it be on paper or creating safe spaces for yourself to see where those parts of you grow.
Yeah, I do. I agree. I think that that just because there is so many horrendous things that have happened for people in the sexual world, that shouldn't tarnish people from wanting to experience the wonderful things that come out of exploring your sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And the term in BDSM commonly used is safe, sane, and consensual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if someone's consenting to something and it's in a safe environment and they're adults, then they should be able to do what they want.
And I think that's a big key that you mentioned about the conversations and within the BDSM world. What is interesting about that is the fact that people communicate. And I sometimes think in the dating world, I think that would be really beneficial if we were able to find different ways to communicate as opposed to trying to figure out what the other person's trying to say. And if we're able to have words where, whether it's banana, where it's like, okay, that really meant no this time, so please stop. And coming up with, you know, just
if you're gagged, tap your foot.
Exactly. Where there's very specific things as opposed to going to Starbucks five times with someone and not sure whether or not you're on a date or not.
I know. Things are so weird these days, aren't they?
It's a different time, and part of it, it's interesting too, even though as much as we want to open up and embrace sexuality, there's also that part, I think, with the change, even though I do think that we're in another wave of feminism, which is great, but I also think in terms that we do need to find opportunities to empower men as well, and it needs to be a happy balance, because I think right now men and women's roles aren't clearly defined. And
a lot of men, I think, have been raised by women without fathers.
And sometimes it's difficult, too, because there is something really lovely about having the caveman, where it's somebody, a man who, I don't like the word nice guy, but somebody who's an authentic guy, who knows exactly what he wants and is able to state it, can be really sexy. So it's kind of like the caveman who was like, you, woman, picking you up and throwing you over the shoulder. It's very
you
sexy.
Over the head with a bat, drag you to the bedroom.
I don't know about the bat, but depends where.
I'm just imagining Fred Flintstone for some reason, and I saw an episode where something like that happened. So
it could be, or it could be Family Guy, but
they reference
that a lot in there. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. And if someone wants to, will the nominations forms be online in the next by Saturday?
Yeah, well, on Saturday, it's October 15th. Perfect. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to post on the Naked Truth, nakedtruth.ca. Mm-hmm. I'm going to post, nominations are open. And here are the rules with nominations. Actually, it's already all up there. I'm just going to say it. And then there's like, you have to give me four pieces of information, the name of the person, contact information of the person, what industry they're a part of, and write a reason why they should be nominated.
Mm-hmm.
And then and then you email it to Ms. Scream at nakedtruth.ca or Ms. Scream at gmail.com. And I will process them all for the next few months.
Perfect.
So vote for your favorite exotic dancer or anyone in the industry and send it my way.
Thank you.
Or not vote, sorry, nominate.
And keep posted as well, and keep checking out the website as well for December 17th activities as well. As we get close to the date, there'll be more information available about that, which is really cool that it's going to be in Vancouver. So thank you for doing that.
No problem. My pleasure.
Yay. And thanks for being on the show.
No problem. Thank you so much. It was so nice to meet you.
Thank you.
And good luck with everything on this radio show. I think it's great what you're doing.
Thank you very much. And up next is Hans von Klaus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He'll be guiding us through the wee hours with his ambient music and his super hot voice. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Have a great night, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.